You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 148 for the week of November 16th, 2011.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
My name is George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a website dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And today, we're going on an epic adventure.
Of course. Traveling around
the world. To the ends of the earth.
Syria. Yes. Yemen.
All kinds of burning houses. We are going to talk about Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. The latest in the Uncharted series, coming off of 2009's blockbuster breakthrough hit for Naughty Dog, Uncharted 2. And for folks that have never heard us do one of these debriefings before, what we tend to do is split the show in half. We'll do about, 15 minutes and change or so of talking about the game from a mechanical perspective and some of the gameplay experiences we had with it. And then we'll give everyone a big warning because especially for a game like Uncharted, it's very story focused and we don't want to spoil anything for anybody. But we'll also have a detailed section talking about the story, the characters, how everything turned out, and then just tying everything up at the end. So be warned, there will be some spoilers in there, but we'll definitely give you a heads up before we dive in.
Right. And before we get into it, Scott, why don't we talk a little bit about our expectations? Because you and I received Uncharted 2 very differently, as I recall.
We did. I felt like we were on divergent trajectories, basically. We met in the middle with Uncharted 2, and then we went our separate ways.
Yeah.
I played Uncharted 1 as well. Did you ever...
I did not.
I think that's not necessarily a rare thing. I feel like Uncharted 2 was basically what put the series on the map for most people.
Yeah.
And why don't you go into it? A quick last time on the Experience Points podcast, what was your reaction to Uncharted 2?
Well, I loved Uncharted 2. I thought it was, as I recall, it was one of my favorite games of, 2009?
Yeah, that was 2009.
And it was one of the first experiences where I played some... I mean, again, everyone describes it as cinematic, and I've heard a lot of complaints about both the second one and this one. And a lot of them ring true to me, or rather, a lot of them rang true to me when I first played the game back in 2009. But I was very much looking forward to Uncharted 3. Yeah, absolutely. How about yourself?
Well, Uncharted 2... I really admire it for what it does.
Yeah.
You can't argue with how hard they must have worked on that and what a masterful job they did with things like animation and environmental details and the writing is really good. I don't really agree with the way that they approach making it into a video game, basically.
Right. It's almost like an ideological point of view you carry.
Right, yeah. I don't hold anything against them. I just don't think what they're doing is necessarily the best way to go about creating a video game. And, the heavily scripted sequences, certain gunfights that are modified to fit the story rather than any kind of mechanical consistency rub me the wrong way. All that being said, I love games that make me think that hard about things.
Yeah.
So I was looking forward to Uncharted 3 pretty much as everybody was, but just for different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. To pick it apart, essentially.
Yeah, it shows, right? I mean, we don't always play games right when they come out. Like, we're not always on the bleeding edge of whatever's being released. But, we're pretty close to the Uncharted 3 release date right here. And so I think it's telling that we both are enthusiastic enough about it that we made a point to get to it as early as possible.
Absolutely. And I should say we both played the multiplayer before launch in both in our Subway beta, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
I played it two times. I played it during the July beta.
Oh, that's right.
And then,
yeah.
Yeah. And then I came back after the Subway thing fired up, you know, I went to Subway and got myself back into the second round of the beta. So I really enjoy the actual gunplay and multiplayer of Uncharted.
Well, then let's use that to segue into the single player gunplay experience. What do you think about the combat in Uncharted 3?
This is the worst Uncharted single player that they've made.
in every which way, or specifically?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
In every which way. Yeah. Besides possibly the dialogue, but we'll get to the story section later.
Uh-oh.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know why the changes. Actually, I do. I know why the changes were made, but I don't know. How do you want to handle this? Do you want me to just keep on being cranky, or
I want you to
like
be cranky.
Go back and forth?
Be a bit specific here. Exactly. What changes do you think soured the experience for you from the second one, and maybe even the first one?
Well, the first one, in a strange way, is almost the most pure shooter of the bunch. The environments were such that it was kind of like just big arenas and corridors that you'd get into, and you'd have to shoot a bunch of dudes and move on. The second one was more scripted. There was more, you know, scripted details and events that would happen while you were shooting around. And the third one, they just went more extreme with it. And the thing that they did to try to satisfy people like me, who are more interested in the shooting, is that They threw a bunch of enemies at you.
Yeah, they gave you basically more bad guys.
Yeah, more bad guys. The bad guys' behavior is also different. The enemies are, I believe, the enemies are faster. They are more apt to, they're more mobile.
Yeah, they'll climb up just as much as you will.
They'll climb, sometimes more in my case. You can tell that they're on certain scripting paths. Like, sometimes an enemy will run straight by you towards cover and then start shooting you.
Yeah.
Like, there are certain parts of Uncharted that the enemies are meant to behave in a certain way. I found it jarring that the enemies have this idea of the map in their head.
Yeah.
An idea that you don't have. You know, I, as a player, go into this map and I need to learn it. I'm fighting a bunch of enemies that clearly know the map already.
Yeah.
Because they're behaving in a certain way that they know exactly where cover is, and they know exactly how, you know, I'm going to be entering the arena. On top of all that, the spawning of the enemies is outrageous in this game.
Yep.
Enemies will spawn from random places, and there will be no enemies up on a balcony, and then all of a sudden there will be an enemy after you've already cleared all of them out. They spawn in waves, basically.
And many, many enemies. It's almost like they're just coming out of closets and stuff. Like, where were you hiding before I came into this room?
In a strange way, it felt a lot like a Call of Duty game, where there's, like, hidden enemy wells somewhere, and you can clear out a room, and you're like, okay, that room is clear, there's no way to get in there, and all of a sudden some enemies will pop out of it.
Yeah.
It's just an inelegant way of adding pressure to the combat.
And oftentimes, especially as you progress later in the game, there's a very predetermined level at which the enemies come out, right? The men with the shotguns and the body armor, for example, will always come out towards the end of the engagement. And so you kind of start knowing, well, I'm entering this room and there's swarm one, I better get into position for swarm two and swarm three.
Yep. Yeah. And also, it's not that the difficulty is modified by any they're not smarter, there's just more of them. So it's like, okay, well, in chapter 10 I had one shotgun armored dude, in chapter 16 there will be three. You know, it's just not it's a very arcadey way of doing it in a game that doesn't have the chops to stand up as an arcadey experience.
Right. Now, I don't know how much it affected my personal enjoyment of the game, but I completely agree with you on all counts in that regards. It was really weird, actually, and really jarring, especially some of the pathed moments you're talking about, because there were times when I would watch an enemy do something absolutely ridiculous, putting themselves in harm's way, easily allowing me to kill them, and then I would die or something, and I'd watch them do the exact same thing over and over and over again, and it never made sense to me. It never felt like they were genuinely intellectual combatants, right? They're not approaching combat in the way that I approached combat. And it got really frustrating when I would die often.
Because you'd see the same things over and over again. And there were certain things where, and this has been a hallmark of the Uncharted franchise since the beginning, the animation is so detailed and so complex that, and you know, they prioritize the animation so much that once you start punching, there's really no way of stopping. And so once you get into these prolonged melee battles with enemies, because at a certain point, like, I don't know, people have talked about how the aiming is kind of off, and I've never been a huge fan of the aiming in Uncharted in general. So a lot of times when there's only one or two dudes left, I would just hop out and punch them instead of shooting them.
Likewise.
And so, but the problem with randomly spawning waves of enemies is that it could take, you know, maybe five or six hits before you actually, you know, they're like fist fights basically to get into a brawl with these enemies. And while you're doing that, another wave has already spawned and is shooting you while you're going through the scripted animation sequences.
And the enemies don't care that you're fighting one of their friends. They'll just shoot a shotgun blast right in the general direction.
Right. And so you are... The penalty is really high. You take damage while you're doing this animation that you couldn't stop even if you wanted to.
Right.
And so it's not a very conducive system for dynamics that necessitate hand-to-hand combat, because you don't know if a sniper is going to randomly spawn from that balcony because there's no rhyme or reason to it. And so you just have to hope that they won't. Like, there's no way of really learning the rules of the game because... it'll just randomly throw enemies at you.
Yeah. And one of the strange things, too, especially with the armored shotgun-wielding enemies, is that you very much have an incentive to fight them in close combat, because then they can't shoot you with a shotgun, which, when in close range, is very, very deadly.
So it could be like one or two hit kills, basically, for those shotgun blasts.
And so I found myself engaging in melee combat with them because I knew that I had so few other options. I was out of grenades, for example, or... maybe I was out of ammo and I decided to engage in combat, and then I was just at the wrong angle. Some guy sees me from very far away and brings me down just low enough, so one missed punch and I'm out.
Yeah, it's and those problems only got worse as the game progressed, because the enemies only get more and more numerous and more well armed, basically.
Right. I do enjoy the combat when I'm far away from enemies. Like, I do enjoy the ranged combat, and even the melee combat. I'm glad they incorporated that into the game, because I did have fun in some of the smaller skirmishes where I could decide I'm going to not shoot this guy and just go up and fight him because he doesn't see me or he's behind cover. It just really made me wish it had better melee combat and better combat, period. I was going into Uncharted 3 coming off of Arkham Asylum, which has excellent.
And not only that, you were coming also off a month or so ago, both of us, Gears of War 3.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And maybe it's just the fact that in my mind I had two excellent games, one that did excellent cover-based shooting and one that did excellent melee combat. And it was just the combat in Uncharted 3 stood out to me more than it did in Uncharted 2. And I felt myself really wishing that it was just better. Because I'd find myself in those scenes, and I loved the set pieces. I loved engaging in combat in those environments, but then they would just throw so many enemies at me and not give me a particularly entertaining way to get rid of them.
Yeah, and like you were saying, there's nothing... There are certain areas that are really entertaining and that are conducive to neat cover firefights, basically. Right. And you know, it's just the little things just start bothering me about it. The armored people are way overpowered. Like, even if you're wearing armor, the literal impact of a bullet will still make you stagger.
Yep.
These guys just soak up clips and clips of rounds. There's so many contrivances, I guess, is what kind of irks me about it.
And a normal game difficulty, they take four shotgun blasts to take out.
Yeah, it's just rough, it's disappointing because I could see those problems in Uncharted 2, and instead of ironing them out, they were exacerbated.
Mm-hmm.
As I get further and further away from it, maybe it's just rose-tinted glasses, but Uncharted 1 is starting to stand out as probably the best shooting Uncharted that you have out there.
Yeah, in terms of those mechanics. I didn't play the first one, but I wouldn't be surprised. And it's hard because I don't want to talk a lot of shit about the combat, because at least for me, that wasn't the major selling point of the game. But I just, there's enough bad elements and there's enough missed opportunities that whenever I think about it, it just stands out in such a strong way.
It also doesn't help that I think the multiplayer is actually really well done.
Right.
When you're playing against human opponents, the moveset is more logical and more understandable. Even if the humans are better than you, the shooting makes more sense. The melee is not as, you know, you don't have to do like multi-level combos for the melee. It works more like most other shooters. And, you know, people have to actually learn the maps rather than just follow their routes through the maps. And so I don't think it does the game any favors to be compared to a multiplayer setting that is actually pretty good.
Mm. So moving on to other mechanics, they added a bit more puzzles in this game.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on those puzzle areas?
I've heard people say that they like them, but I didn't really find them all that different from Uncharted 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly like you get into a puzzle situation, you press the select button, you bring up Drake's journal, which I think is still a really neat effect. Like, I like his journal and notes that he has in there.
Yeah. Especially the way that he documents past experiences.
Yeah, like all the sketches, and he puts the answers that he's found later. And it's just a neat, again, like Naughty Dog is great with the details. Like, it feels lived in. Like, this actually does feel, I wish my journal looked like that. I wish I could draw as good as Drake could draw.
I know, I kept thinking if he ever decides to retire from the Tomb Raiding business, he can go into art.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a master sketch artist or whatever, but in any case, you open up the journal, and it basically just gives you the answer. Like, it's not much of a puzzle. Like, you're just kind of, it's like the hint system of an adventure game, except that you're prompted to do it right away.
Right.
But, I mean, they're cool in an Indiana Jones type way. It's nice to see all this, like, you know, ancient machinery creak to life or whatever.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. I mean, there were some that I found slightly difficult, but it was more trial and error than it was conceptual.
Which ones were you thinking about?
Specifically, there's a puzzle where you have to cast shadows with body parts.
That was death.
Yeah, that was just... It was hard to find the angle, and there were so many spots, and yeah, it was not particularly well telegraphed, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard because those scenes are meant to... break up the fast moving parts of the game. You know, they let you catch your breath for a minute or two, but you know, like you were saying, some of them are a little bit obscure and finicky. Like I'm sure you, like me, knew exactly what to do when you got to that shadow casting part.
Right.
It was just, it's kind of frustrating to know exactly what to do. It's just the finickiness of it is preventing you from going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, it's neat enough, and I understand those more as, you know, the puzzles aren't really meant to challenge you intellectually. They're more meant to, you know, they're meant to be reflective moments, almost world-building moments, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I think the game shines when you are, I guess when you're inhabiting environments that are changing, either because there's a scripted event going on around you, or because... you know, there's an excellent set piece about halfway through the game where you're on a boat on a cruise ship, and when you're firing at enemies, the waves are causing you to go up and down, and it creates a really cool augmentation on the normal shooting mechanic, because all of a sudden you have to start compensating for, you know, the rise and flow of the tide.
Yeah, I mean, and we, you know, we've been talking a lot of mess about it so far, but we should. It sounds like we agree on this. What do you even call that? Like the shipyard section, I guess?
Yeah, it's like a ship graveyard.
Yeah, and then you get to the point in the trailers that everyone's already seen where you're on a big cruise ship and you're in a storm. But that sequence was great, and that was something that I feel like they really improved on the last game. Because I felt like the last game, the environments were great, but they didn't really do anything to the dynamics of the game.
Yeah.
And then as I was trying to line up my sniper shot, and a big wave would, you know, just kind of crest, and I was like, oh, okay, I just shot the side of that boat. Like, I'm going to need to think about the tides, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And there were many moments where I was just saying out loud, like, oh my god, I can't believe this is happening. And you know, sometimes that was the normal scripted event where you can't do anything about it. You know, I don't want to ruin that scene, but there's a situation in which the environment changes very dramatically, and... it's very fun to approach the world in that sort of different way.
Yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you're talking about, and it just speaks to how detailed Naughty Dog gets with the environments.
Yeah.
And just from a technical perspective, I was just thinking about what they had to render. Like, so there's a big box, and then in that box there is some physically accurate or close enough rendered body of water, and then within that system there's a boat. And then within that boat, there's also little systems going on, like other puddles of water and items that you have to take into account the gravity of and so forth. Like, just the layers upon layers of technical detail and artistic detail that they're dealing with is, it's beyond pretty much any other game out there. Like, I can't even think of anything that approaches it.
Yeah, and it just glistens with polish. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a scene earlier in the game where you are basically... Well, there's two scenes, one in which you are following someone while you're on the rooftops, which I thought was really entertaining. Mm-hmm. And then another scene where it's just basically a chase scene, an on-foot chase scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really linear, and I know that some people don't really enjoy that aspect of the Uncharted franchise, but when you're moving through such a lush and rich and lived-in environment, it's very exciting in a very, of course, everyone says it, cinematic way.
Mm-hmm.
And those scenes were some of the best. And again, like you said, it's not something I've ever seen done or see done at all in the industry.
Yeah, they're really alone in terms of their cinematography and how they set up environments and... You know, it's funny, like, we're calling it, you know, scripted or linear, but it's surpassing Call of Duty in most environments, I believe. You know,
absolutely.
I feel like the Modern Warfare series is probably the closest analog you have to some of those scenes. And even so, as linear as it is, I think Uncharted gives you more leeway in those scenes than the Modern Warfare series does.
I agree. And oftentimes when you're moving through a more confined environment, there's something that's pushing you forward, right? Like
mm-hmm.
the intensity of the scene demands that you not care about that. You don't get time to poke and prod at the corners in the way that you can in Modern Warfare.
It's like those directors and Hollywood artists that spend hours and hours and hours on a prop that's only going to be on screen for like 1 minute.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, can you imagine being the artists at Naughty Dog that are like, okay, I spent weeks and weeks and weeks, creating this town in South America, and the player will be in it for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's so much dedication to detail and then so much discipline to just let it go after the scene ends, you know?
Yep. Well, shall we move on to some of the story elements?
Yeah. So I guess right now we should say spoilers. For the story of Uncharted and some of the bigger gameplay shifts that happen in it.
Yeah.
Because then we could talk about the boat.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, so where should we start?
Let's start at the boat, because I feel like that was the apex of the game.
You think it was, what, all downhill from there?
Pretty much.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So literally, because you're falling down a boat.
I mean, that was, I have to say, that was one of the most absolutely stunning scenes I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, for folks that have played it, or for folks that don't care, we're talking about the point where you're out on a huge cruise ship and it capsizes.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of a sudden, the rooms that you were in are now sideways or now vertical. He's like climbing up a hallway and... You know, things are flooding and so forth.
And I have to say, I love the moment in all games, and Left 4 Dead 2 does it in their rain scene, but in which an environmental effect suddenly and drastically changes the play experience of the same space that you were in before.
Yep.
You know, like, and those hallways are the same hallways, but all of a sudden they are completely on their side and you have to traverse them in a very different way.
It's great. I mean, it's great layered design. Like, those hallways had to be designed in such a way that, like you were saying, they could be traversed in a multitude of ways, and that necessitates an attention to detail and level design that has to be spot on, because there's no room for error if your level has to work upside down and right side up, backwards and forwards. It needs to be very well designed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like, though, at the same time, that cruise ship was basically where the combat started getting really, really irritating.
Yeah, I totally agree. In particular, the battle inside the giant room.
Where it was kind of like flooding back and forth, kind of.
I'm talking about, well, God, that one took a while too. But specifically the one with the chandelier.
Hmm.
And the piano in the center, do you not remember?
Oh, yes, yes. It's like
a banquet hall, basically. Like, there's a stage there.
How could I not remember that? I had to play that like 10 times in a row.
Yeah, and and one of the worst things about it is that the enemies will not spawn until you've reached a certain point in the room that is not particularly advantageous for you.
Right.
Right? Like, and they flood out and come at you from all sides, and it's difficult to move from that spot. And if you do move from that spot, the enemies won't respond to you in a very natural way, and there's not very much cover later on, and what a mess, absolute mess, in a beautiful scene.
Right. You know, at a certain point, I got to thinking, I got to thinking that maybe we should start flattering ourselves. So, like, we're pretty experienced game players, and I feel like, given the choice, we kind of like pressing on, moving on. And I felt like at certain points, I would try to advance too quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I would get to a point where it's like, oh my god, there's a clump of six dudes here. Clearly, they haven't run their scripts to get to their cover areas yet.
Yeah.
And then they all just all blast me. And so I started playing much slower. Like, I would just kind of wait and let everyone, you know, let the scene get set up and then start fighting.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I did slow down my combat very much in regards to the layout of the game, especially around in that middle part when the enemies start becoming very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
But again, I get back to just not having a system that's good enough, right? Like, yeah. I tried to be stealthy so many times, but...
Well, the stealth system has been messed up since the second game, basically.
Well, and again, and part of it, too, is there's so many more enemies, and if they see you and you die, you've got to do it all over again, and it just becomes far too tedious.
Yeah. It's hard, you know, stealth is an age-old problem. I mean, we kind of make fun of Metal Gear for, like, having a stealth radar and stuff like that, but without some contrivance as to show, you know, how likely it is for someone to spot you, it's really hard to do a stealth sequence.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's hard to know what the enemy's field of vision is, and it's hard to know how much noise you're making and what, you know, what will set off an enemy and what won't. It feels very arbitrary.
Well, there was a short scene in which they included a silent pistol.
Yeah, that was kind of neat when you were with Elena in the, what was it, right. The airport?
And they never bring that silent pistol back.
Right.
And I think silenced weaponry would have been a nice touch. That's an easy way to go around, because then you could be stealthy without having to be, you know, quote-unquote stealthy.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But it's one of those things, like, you know, Drake gains and loses guns based on the flow of the story, not the input of the player.
Right.
You know, like, you'll get to the next scene, and then the cutscene won't show the shotgun that you have on your back, and it's like, oh, now I know, it's time to reset, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's the scripted part that kind of, you know, you just have to deal with if you want to play this type of game.
And I'm fine with that. You know, there are times when he throws his gun aside because he's like, oh, we need to go in stealthily or whatnot. And, you know, as many people have lauded before, this is a game in which Drake doesn't even get a weapon for the first, like, 45 minutes of the game.
Yeah, yeah. I was surprised at that. I expected, you know, like you were saying, I played for, like, an hour, and I was like, hey, wait a second. I haven't been shooting any dudes yet. You know, this is very strange.
And I loved that, because the best thing about the game for me is the adventuring aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And I liked being stealthy. I liked engaging in fist combat.
Yeah.
So it was a little, actually, a bit disappointing when I started entering those scenes that were very, very gunfight heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hard balance to strike. But, you know, it gives us an opportunity to talk about the personalities of the characters and stuff, too, because all that kind of bleeds into what the story was about, especially with the opening bar fight sequence.
What do you mean with the bar fight?
Well, I mean, you know, these... Drake, by his personality, isn't necessarily a Rambo-like character. I feel like in this one, they really tried to capture the spirit of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where there was a lot of kind of fist fighting. Mm-hmm. And they even, like, you know, blatantly rip it off with having, like, huge bruiser dudes every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it kind of... You know, he's an adventurer.
Well, and you say every once in a while, but they come out a lot.
Well, that's another problem. Like, you know, the reason why Raiders of the Lost Ark is a really good movie is that it never wears out its welcome. Like, there's only one sequence when Indy is running away from something towards the camera. There's only one sequence where Indy is fighting a big brute. There's only one sequence where Indy has to navigate a vermin-infested room. But in Uncharted, all those things happen multiple times.
Right.
And so it kind of, you know, it's really hard to keep up the dramatic punch of those situations when they become old hat by the back third of the game.
Right.
I still enjoyed the story quite a bit. Actually, no. Well, let's qualify this. I enjoyed 2/3 of the story quite a bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was probably my favorite of the Uncharted storytelling. And, I mean, again, I loved... the way that the environments fit so well with the type of story that they're telling. It's very much in that Indiana Jones vein. It was great being in those environments. It was great hearing Drake and Sully talk about not only the mysteries behind what they were doing, but also the cost of that in a moral sense, right? In the fact that they are actually risking each other's lives. And it shone a light on the sort of Rambo-esque nature of Drake in a way that I was really surprised that Naughty Dog decided to go. You know, when Elena asks Drake whether or not it's something he enjoys doing, putting his life in danger, I thought that was great, and it created a really cool opportunity to plumb the depths of Nathan Drake's psyche, given the wider game context. And then they just drop that ball completely.
Well, I was so happy to see so much of it was focused on Drake and Sully's relationship, because I've been kind of wanting to know more about that since the first game.
Yeah, I love the flashback in the beginning of the game as well.
Yeah, they have a flashback where Drake and Sully meet each other for the first time, and Drake is a teenager, and Sully's kind of, you know, kind of a wizened but still in his prime treasure hunter.
Yeah, and I'm a sucker for father-son stories too. So I loved the relationship that Sully and Drake had.
So many times when I was in that sequence, I believe it was Columbia, when they were in Columbia, I just was sitting there on the couch saying to myself, "This belongs in a museum," and just running around.
It's funny because you're taking it from a museum.
Yeah, I was like, this is the Last Crusade, except he's stealing stuff instead of trying to prevent treasure hunters from getting it.
Yeah, exactly. I was also kind of surprised that Elena made such a late appearance into the story.
Yeah, I was a bit bummed out that they didn't. I think overall, I probably enjoyed Uncharted 2's story more just because it was a very nuanced romance.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I wonder what happened with Nate and Elena. And when I didn't see her for a long time, I was like, man, that's a pretty shabby way of treating one of the main characters of you know, the second game.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of enjoyed Cutter. He was a cool addition.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah. I'm not so sure about Marlo and the basically Scarecrow. I don't know how he has these crazy powers of psychological
Well, stuff. See, I think that's kind of where the story falls apart. Like, I thought I thought Marlo and the actress who played her were really good as far as the dialogue and the acting is concerned. But I was waiting for that explanation. Like, why? What drives her to do it besides some, you know, irrepressible hunger for power? You know, why is she doing this?
Well, there's that weird allusion to her being part of some secret organization that's been trying to gain power for hundreds of years. It got very Assassin's Creed-y.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Yeah, she's like a Templar or something, and she's trying to hide all this stuff.
She probably is. I think we're gonna get a crossover.
Oh man, how wild would that be? Okay, I need to stop that, or else my mind will just start racing. But I mean, I think Marlo was a good villain up until the point when I realized that they weren't gonna give her any motivation at all.
Yeah, I mean, she's an Indiana Jones villain in that way.
But at least Indiana Jones villains were Nazis. Like, they were just evil, you know? Like, there's there's no reason why she's doing this. And even less reason why her main minion is doing it. Like, he's just a douche. Like, that's his entire character.
Yeah, he's the total asshole.
Yeah, and it's like, why is he even helping her? Like, where's his allegiance come into all this? You know, it just doesn't...
Well, for a while, I thought there was going to be some, like, weird time travel stuff going on.
I did, too. I did as well. And you know what? I think this was a response to people getting kind of tired of the supernatural stuff. Because I feel like they dialed down the supernatural stuff this time around.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, other than a fucking magical city surrounded by sandstorms.
Well, I mean, sure, that's all, you know, that's all magical and everything, but there were no Yetis, there were no, zombie conquistadors. That was in the first game, there were zombie conquistadors. In the second game, there were crazy people who had been infected by the power of Shangri-La. And then the third one, it was like, it's basically poisoned water that makes people crazy.
Yeah, you're just hallucinating these sort of demon people.
Which annoyed me even more, because the demon enemies that you fight during hallucinations should not be able to harm you physically.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's huge holes in the story.
Maybe
that
it's
don't
just an abstract
sense.
Psychological harm.
So in actuality,
it's like when
I'm
you
getting
die in
blasted,
a dream.
Yeah,
yeah.
If you were to zoom out, you would just see Nathan Drake in the fetal position in the corner, just cowering.
Yeah. So in terms of like them dropping the ball, it's so. it's so weird to me because I think the story is so tight, those first two thirds.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really nice story, and they flow really well from scene to scene. Everything makes sense. There's a scene where Sully jokes about, why are we doing this again? But when he said that, I already knew, you know, and that's kind of rare for stories. I'm really used to forgetting why I'm at where I'm at and why I'm doing what I'm doing. But I was always cognizant of the motivations of everybody that I was interacting with and playing with. And then it just kind of stops, and you get a ridiculous Deus Ex with that nomadic tribe in the desert.
I mean, he's basically like the magical Negro archetype. Like, you know, the noble brown person helps you for no real reason.
But who's intimately familiar with a lost city in the desert.
Yeah.
Who can show up the last minute to save your ass when all hell is breaking loose.
Also, have a horse. Why not?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
And it just... it's so bizarre to me because it feels like such an obvious cop-out.
Yeah.
And add on to that, and what I found most offensive was the story about Drake and Sully and Drake being a character who was engaging in an activity that puts the lives of his friends at risk. I thought was really interesting and a really rich place to explore.
Yeah.
And they kill off Sully in a sort of hallucination sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, awesome, this is great. And the way they kill him off is fantastic. It's not adventurous, it's not glorious. He gets shot in the back and doesn't have a final goodbye. And I thought that would have been awesome to watch Drake deal with. And then you find out that's a hallucination.
Just a dream, lols.
Yeah, Sully is alive. But more than that is Drake was not changed in any significant way, narratively, by that experience of seeing Sully die. You know, like he doesn't go to Sully and tell him, I'm an asshole for putting you in this situation, even though you clearly would rather just retire at this point. Or, or I love you like a father. You know, like the very last scene in the game, Sully and Drake are talking, and Sully's getting sentimental, and Drake breaks up that sentimentality with a joke.
Yeah.
And normally I'm okay with that because Drake is a humorous guy, but that was the last opportunity they had to have him learn something from that experience, and it was completely wasted.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what they were trying to do at the same time was reconcile what had happened, you know, in between Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 with Elena, because clearly they had gotten married at some point and then broken up.
Right.
And so it's like, that would have been a really nice place to be like, all right, well, we're going to put the ring back on, and that means that, you know, our priorities will shift, basically.
Yeah.
But there's nothing really like that in the end, which is too bad, because I felt like, you know, Elena is, it's not a very, you know, it's not a very innovative role for a female co-lead to be in, but she's like his foil, basically, you know, the more level-headed, responsible person in the duo.
And she's great in Uncharted 2. I absolutely love her character.
She's great in Uncharted 3 when she's on screen. Like,
I
think she's a really strong character, and I still like the interactions that she and Drake have. Like, there's a lot of, you know, say what you will about the story, but I mean the interactions between the two of them are really good. Like there are certain things where a lesser or a less experienced writer would have ruined it with too many words, but like they capture it. You know, Elena and Drake say a couple things to each other, and they're really loaded with subtext. And then they give each other looks, or they'll, you know, subtly touch each other or something like that, and then that's it. Like, they don't ruin it with too much exposition.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get a sense of how close they actually are, even though they're separated.
Yeah, and they do, and again, they did it in Uncharted 2, but they do another scene in which, you know, he fulfills the normal masculine role of telling her to stand aside, and then she doesn't.
Yeah.
And it always creates a really exciting scene, and oftentimes it's also very, like, life-threatening for them. And to keep in mind their sort of romantic relationships, those make those scenes really fun to watch and engage with. That airplane scene, airplane scenario, was completely made by Elena being there. I think that would have not been a fun experience without her.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really, that type of thing is really strong. And when Sully gets kidnapped and when Drake is just on his own, you lose that. You know, you lose what makes the characters special. And in video games, it's really hard to show relationships in traditional ways. And Uncharted 2 in particular was really strong at this because they had this quasi love triangle thing going on.
Yeah.
And you know, the best scenes again are where Drake and Sully are together, or Drake and Elena are together, or Elena are together. And, you know, it's I just wished for more of that. Like, I thought it was going to go further into their relationship rather than further into Sully and Drake's relationship. Both are good, but then at a certain point, he just kind of lone wolves it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, in the background, we've got the story of the actual Drake, the Explorer. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was intentional, but I guess now I realize it's just a contrivance. But at the time, when you are solving those puzzles, some of them require more than one person, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was sort of telling the story of the original Drake having friends with him, you know, and needing these friends to keep moving forward. And I guess near the part where the original Drake stopped his adventure, there's fewer friends necessary, right? All you need is like Elena and Sully to solve some of the puzzles. Yeah. And I thought for sure they're going to address something about needing your friends and then losing your friends because you're putting yourself in danger. And I guess I was just imbuing like the game contrivances with more meaning than they actually carried.
Yeah. But just, I mean, again, that would have been really nice though. I mean, like, I didn't even think about this, but I'm glad you brought it up. But wouldn't it have been it would have been cheesy and you would have had to write about it very carefully. But I have faith in Amy Hennig to do it. Like, wouldn't it have been neat if Drake had some sort of mentor himself as he was making this crazy circumnavigational journey across the globe?
Right, yeah.
And like, he lost his version of Sully, and like Drake had to learn something from that, basically.
And the interesting thing is they do create the space for us to see the original Nathan Drake as a double. You know, the game's always questioning who is Nathan Drake, right? Because we know that's not his real name.
Mm-hmm.
And in what way, then, is he like this Explorer? And if the Explorer changed his mind and decided to stop moving, why is Drake continuing forward? You know, there's a lot of potential and rich story elements there waiting to be plucked.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're not. But I agree with you. I think Amy Hennig is a fantastic writer, probably the best in the industry. And I would love to see her, I don't know, have a bit more, maybe it's a matter of control over...
It could be a matter of control. Maybe it's a matter of time. I mean... You know, for a game like Uncharted, 2 years is not necessarily a really long time, it seems like.
I mean, especially if what we see is the story kind of falling apart a little bit as the game progresses.
Right. Which is a very video gamey thing to happen.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of video game stories fall apart as they go on. And so it seems like... It's funny because I think that we've gotten to the point with Uncharted where you can say the writing and acting is good and you don't even need to attach for a video game on the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Uncharted games, the past two Uncharted games have been way better than any of the Indiana Jones, National Treasure, or like anything, you know, like
Crystal Skull. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like they're as good as primetime TV. Like you don't need to qualify it anymore. And so now it's just recognizing what they're strong in and then designing around that. Which, again, is a philosophical difference I have with them, but I endorse their right to do it, you know?
Right.
Oh, man, what a wild conversation we've been having about this game.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like I've been trash-talking the game.
Yes.
And I want to emphasize that I think the game is fantastic, and no one else does it better, and it is just top-tier voice acting and top-tier world-building, and, you know, they really bring... the most polished that I've ever seen in a AAA title.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that is partly why some of the mistakes, especially this go-around, after experiencing Uncharted 2, stand out to me more than they ever have before. Because I do think that if this were my first experience with an Uncharted game, I would ignore a lot of my criticisms.
Yeah, just because they would be new. You know, you wouldn't be used to them yet.
Yeah, but I think that this go-around, they stand out a bit more. And so it just... I don't know, I guess it makes me a little bit more sad then that the game is so good, but it just doesn't quite get to that point where it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah, it's a rough position to be in, and it brings up the question of do you think that what do you think the future is like? Let's just speculate for a while. Like, would you be interested in Uncharted 4?
I would. I absolutely would. And, you know, I would be interested in another Indiana Jones movie, too, right?
Like, yeah.
I'm a generally optimistic kind of guy. I think there's still a lot of room for Nathan Drake to go, you know, and I would love to see a sort of spinoff tale because I think that might liberate them a bit from the mechanics that they've already built up. You know, mm-hmm. like if we were given a smaller and tighter story about Drake, maybe they'd be willing to take some risks in terms of changing gunplay and changing stealth mechanics,
mm-hmm.
and changing how much time they spend with Drake as a storytelling mechanism.
Yeah, I agree. I think that scope is a dangerous thing. And, you know, you start off with these four characters and they all have pretty strong personalities. But again, halfway through the game, Chloe and Cutter basically fall off the face of the earth.
Yep.
And you don't, even at the end, you don't even really know what happened to them. Like at that last scene at the airport, I was like, hey, I wonder what Chloe's doing right now.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to keep all of those plates spinning when you have to do it for, you know, 8 hours or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that we saw the flashback, right, we have a young Indiana Jones.
I know.
Give me a young Nathan Drake, right? Wouldn't you sign up for that?
It's pretty wild how closely it's hewing to the Indiana Jones trajectory. I mean, like, it is. You could start, you know, on the PS Vita, you could have, like, a young Drake series or something like that.
Well, and the great thing about a young Indiana Jones, or, sorry, a young Nathan Drake, is that it would provide the excuse for him not shooting everybody.
Yeah. Because he was scared to shoot. He wasn't going to shoot the enemy who cornered him at the beginning of that chase sequence.
In fact, I would love to play a game that shows how Nathan Drake did become a murderer. And a good one, you know.
He's a very proficient murderer.
Like, if I could play like a 6-hour game on the Vita, and 5 hours in, Drake kills someone for the first time, and it's a big dramatic moment, I would love that experience, because I do think it fits really well, and we can have a dialogue between the violence that Drake exhibits in the normal, sort of normally excluded gameplay elements, and the story of him as a person.
Yeah, I mean, the universe of Uncharted has quietly become a lot more expansive, you know, over the past couple games. Like, there's a lot more there than there was when it first started out. It didn't look like there might be that much to explore, and they've really subtly expanded it, you know, as to all these ideas that we were just coming up with off the top of our head.
Yeah. So we're running out of time, but I want to talk a bit about multiplayer. Now, I should say, I haven't had a chance to play any of the multiplayer because
Subway.
Well, just from Subway. Exactly. Just from Subway. But I haven't purchased the game. I got it off of Gamefly, and they charge $10 to play multiplayer.
Apparently. That's right. It's like the EA's, or I think it's EA, it's like Project $10, basically, to cut out the used game sales.
When I saw that, I was furious.
Well,
here's the thing for me, right? And I've said this before about games that allow you to pay to not play the game. This is the opposite, right? Like, the multiplayer should be good enough to make me want to keep the game. Mm-hmm. You know, Gamefly makes it very easy for me to keep a game, to buy a game, or I could go to the store and pick it up. It's fine. The multiplayer should be good enough to keep its claws in me for me to want to own the game. Rather than selling it off. But all of a sudden, I can't play it because I got it through Gamefly.
Well, you're just experiencing the other side of that twisted logic. Like, their logic is like, the multiplayer is so good that you'll be willing to pay more for it. So don't even bother buying it used or renting it. So you're just kind of...
I can't play it first. I mean, I can because I got, you know, I did the Subway thing.
Right.
But the thing is, I'm not even buying the game used. I'm just renting it for the time being.
Yeah.
Which to me always seems like a less of a bad thing, right? I'm not stealing it. Someone who does own it. Like, I understand. Like, again, they're not seeing any of that revenue themselves.
But, I mean, that's... And, you know, I will not make any friends by saying this. And, like, I'll preface this by saying that all my friends, all my developer friends, everyone in the community, I recognize how hard it is to make a game and how expensive it is and how stressful it is. But the video game industry is unique in, like, vociferously complaining about the gray market. And it's like, Toyota doesn't get shit for when I buy a used Toyota off of just some random dealer. Like, Apple doesn't see anything when I buy a used MacBook. Like, it doesn't... To expect that you get money off of used sales is saying that you are different from every other industry on the face of the planet.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I have Zipcar, for example.
Yeah.
Toyota's not seeing it every time I choose to pay to drive the Prius or whatever.
Yeah, they're just getting a rate from Zipcar, you know, like and that's what Gamefly is doing, you know, like they're just buying the games at a certain rate or whatever it may be. And it's like, the other thing is, we're going to get to a point where renting games and buying used games is impossible because it's all going to be digital.
Yeah.
And so to claw, you know, tooth and nail against people's fleeting freedom to do so. Like, just it's like, why bother, guys? Like, yeah. In 10 or 15 years, this problem's gonna solve itself. Like, let people have, you know, let people enjoy it while it lasts, because it's not gonna last forever.
The other thing too is, again, this is something that is a core component of that experience. I understand wanting to reward players for the loyalty and buying the game day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Arkham City has the Catwoman DLC that you get if you buy the game new, and that costs $10, the same amount it costs to play multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you buy the Catwoman DLC, you actively have to download something, and it changes and adds additional content to an already rich experience, and you're getting a value for that. But instead, I'm paying to have the privilege to play the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it just rubs me very wrong.
Yeah,
it's the weird thing is, like, I own Uncharted 2. I'll probably own Uncharted 3. But this is, when I saw that, it was a huge setback to me. Like, I was genuinely mad and really thinking, you know what, I would rather not buy this game at all than
support that. Exactly. Yeah, it's hard because, you know, we've talked about this. We've talked about this a few times over the past month and largely over the past year, like the different monetization schemes that bigger franchises can now afford to start looking into. Like, maybe would you have paid like $30 or $40 for just the single player, or maybe just the multiplayer?
Totally.
So it's like Modern Warfare 3, as we record this, Modern Warfare 3 has hit the streets, basically. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I would pay a reduced rate to decouple the multiplayer from the single player. Like, maybe I'm only interested in the multiplayer. Well, why am I paying for anything for the single player in that case?
Yeah.
And so it's like a more consumer-friendly way to go about this is just making it, is giving people more options, you know,
like two separate costs, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, maybe they add up to $60 or $70, you know, if you buy them together. But for folks that aren't interested at all in the multiplayer, they won't have to pay for something that they're not ever going to use.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I did enjoy the multiplayer. Like, I would actually consider buying the multiplayer and renting the single player, you know.
If I bought the game used, say, for example, I went to GameStop and got Uncharted 3 for $50 or something, I don't think I'd have any qualms paying an additional $10 to fully unlock some extra content, right? Because then I'm engaged with the entirety of the game, and I've paid the normal cost as if I bought it new, right?
But at that point, why not just buy it new?
Yeah, or I would just buy it new. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But as it stands, like, that's not really... I don't think you're going to go to the store and find a used copy of Uncharted 3 for less than $55.
Yeah,
GameStop doesn't give a that big of a discount. It's usually maybe 10%. $10 is more than 10%.
Right.
You know, like, and it very much comes off as, we're punishing you, and we're punishing you almost unfairly. Like, if it really was a punishment method, why not charge $5 to unlock the multiplayer?
Well, because then you'd be kind of playing into GameStop's economic situation. I mean, it sucks the most for people that are doing it informally, like between friends or something like that.
Yeah.
Or selling it off of eBay or something. You know, it's just, it's hard. And again, like, this is, it's a weird transitional period in the industry, and it's not going to last forever. And guess what? The end is going to be that none of this stuff exists anymore. Like, it's all going to be, the future, I've seen the future, and the future looks like Steam. And guess what you can't do on Steam? You know, buy and sell used games.
Yeah, but what you can do on Steam is have sales, have deals.
Right.
Have bundles.
And a way more friendly thing than locking content behind additional purchases.
Right. Well, I mean, that aside, you enjoyed the multiplayer?
I enjoyed the competitive multiplayer, and my brother and I, we like harkened back to our childhood. It was like cold outside, kind of rainy, and we just spent like 6 hours playing the co-op campaigns, like just powering through it. And they were pretty good. You know, they do some interesting spins on traditional modes like Horde and Capture the Flag, and you know, they do it in the way that Uncharted would do it. You know, you're throwing idols across the room, you're doing some traversal. It's a fitting adaptation to what Uncharted feels like.
Experiencing that co-op, do you think that the single player is missing out on that opportunity?
I don't know. I feel like the It doesn't, you know, the thing that it doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like the single player. Like, the story is just very, very loose. And even the dynamics are different. There are, you can't melee attack a helmeted enemy in multiplayer because he'll just kick you away. Whereas in the single player, you can do it because you'll just knock off his helmet with your hand. But in multiplayer, that is impossible. Also, regular enemies go down quicker with melee attacks in multiplayer, which gave me some really bad habits for when I went back to the single player to finish it up.
Nice.
But I mean, I think that's, it's a fun diversion from the main plot. And again, there is a good, you know, 5 hours, maybe 6 hours or so in just regular co-op. And then again, the competitive multiplayer is robust. You know, there's very few shooters that have the platforming elements that Uncharted has.
Yeah.
So, Uncharted 4 next year. No, Uncharted 4 next year.
Yeah. 2 years. We'll come back 2013.
And we'll complain about it even more bitterly and then and look forward to Uncharted 5 even more fervently.
I mean, at this rate, it's just going to be, you know, more and more extremes. Even better story, even better set pieces, yeah. Worse combat.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, and this has been a podcast where it's not like I feel good about feeling down on certain aspects of the game. Like, I think this is like a monumental accomplishment for them.
Right.
And I think people should play this game, whether they like it or not. It's a very thought-provoking game. You know, you'll be thinking after you finish this game.
And I think that for, at least for our approach to video games, that is the highest praise we can give.
Right, yeah. You get the golden nerd medal from experiencepoints.net.
Yeah.
Thanks for working out our thumbs and our brains.
Awesome.
All right, well, if you want to write in with your thoughts or suggestions, comments, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
Also, feel free to visit experiencepoints.net. That's the site where we write. We put up all of our writing over there. We also write at popmatters.com, so go over there and check that out as well. And if you want to play any multiplayer with us, Scott, where can they find you on PS3?
I am the creatively named S. Juster on PSN.
And I am the juvenilely named Shen4891 on PS3, 360, and Steam.
Oh, my Steam name is also S. Juster, I believe. Oh, well, I think. Then. I mean, if you search for Juster, I think there's only like 5 of us in the world, so you'll probably find us.
Nice. Okay, well, until next week.
All right, take it easy, everyone.
Bye-bye.